Like, oh my god. You should see if I have done it. I'm just like off the
wall. I've seen him like
uncontrollably.
I've seen
him. That's just kind of nice.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. I need you to make sure that you give me your presentation preference sheets today. And, you know, if I don't get yours when I finally get around to sorting out the groups, which I'll probably try to do tonight or tomorrow, if I have a small group, that's where you'll go. So, at any rate, so get those to me in the class today or this afternoon. Hand it to me or put it under my office door or something. So, any questions about presentations at the moment? Okay. So, last time we were talking about the Lorentz force law. And in fact, what we did was we looked at the form for when you have a current in a wire. And this is a place where it's easy to get confused because you sort of think that a current is moving electrons and the force on the wire goes as Li cross B, but this is always defined to be the direction of positive current flow, so just don't forget that. So at any rate, so the other thing is the force on the wire is going to depend on basically how much current you have in that field. So that's both the length of the wire and the amount of current that's in the wire itself. So those both come in. The direction is important, and whether you mentally assign the direction to the current or sort of to the length, if you want to call that a vector, if in your mind you're sort of going from one side to another. That may sound a little bit silly, but mentally it makes sense to do it that way when you're integrating along a wire sometimes. You sort of make a little DL and then integrate along. So that's where this form often comes in. It doesn't really matter which way you define it. It's just the direction of it is in the direction of positive current flow. So it's either the length times I cross B or the current magnitude times L in the form of a vector in the direction of the current cross B. And then we looked at the magnetostatic analog to Coulomb's law, which we had in electrostatics. And remember that Coulomb's law is something that basically allows you to look at the force on a particle that's at point P due to a charge Q some distance, some vector R away. And we typically will put this in the form of the electric field, which is the force per unit charge, right? And so we had different forms. We have this for a point charge, and then we looked at a form for a discrete distribution where we look at the differential field at point P is K dQ, where dQ is this differential piece. And then we have the R scaling, just like you have up here. In magnetostatics, we call it the law of Biot-Savart. And it's a little bit confusing because the force... Okay, so why? We have a charge moving with a velocity v in this direction. We consider what is the magnetic field at point P given by a vector r instantaneously shown in here relative to q. And the field at that point is going to be this weird quantity mu zero, which is the permeability of free space, which is 4 pi times 10 to the minus 7 tesla meters over amps. And so you have this quantity, mu zero over 4 pi is just basically 10 to the minus 7. So B at P due to this Q is going to be Q times V cross R over R squared. And I forgot to double check this. This should be an R hat, I think, because I think it goes as R 1 over R squared. So we had that confusion in the last class, and I just pulled this from last class's slides and forgot to actually check that. Sorry. Okay, So this particular form isn't so useful, at least not at this stage of your physics career, because it's certainly not a pretty thing, because you've got this charge moving, which is a particular point in space, and it's moving fast, right? So you have a rapidly changing R. So you get something like an impulse field at point P. So it's a bit of a chore to be thinking your way through that. What is much more useful is to consider many of these charges in a distribution, and then ask. So if we have a steady current, for example, then you can imagine having a little dq here, which is a lambda d, a little dl of current, sorry, and you can now look at the differential form of the magnetic field, the differential form of B O sub R. So we ask, what is the little differential magnetic field at point P due to the little current that we have at this point? Okay. So instead of the charge times V, we actually just think of a little current and of length dl. So this form then is something that's very useful. And in fact, you'll want to, it's also useful in terms of thinking your way through how the field is going to look surrounding some geometry that you have. So one thing that makes this a little bit strange relative to Coulomb's law is that this is a formula for the magnetic field at point P, right? But that field at point P isn't along R, it's not along I, right? It's at some weird angle. So you have to think this cross product through. In this case, you've got dl this way along the current, and R is a vector that's pointed in this direction. So our dl is this way, R is that way. So the cross product is into the board. Okay? So this thing will give you the magnitude of this, gives you the magnitude of the field at point P, but now you have to think your way through the cross product to get the direction right. So you need to sort of learn to do that. We'll practice that some in a few minutes. At any rate, once you have this differential form, then if you want the full field at point P, it depends on all the currents that you have in this area, and you integrate over that current distribution, whatever it happens to be, and that gives you the full field. Okay? So this formula then works for any sort of situation where you have steady currents of some form. And you, of course, might have a current density, so that's where we're going to go with this soon, is you can actually have a variation in what the current is, or the geometry can vary and things like that. So this can be, just like Coulomb's law, it can be arbitrarily difficult, right? I mean, you can make these as perverse as you want, but there are, when you go through the homework problems and things, you'll find there's systematically a few geometries where it's sort of doable. Okay, any questions on those? So let's do one of those geometries, actually. Actually, before I do that, though, let's think our way through what we get from B O sub R. There are three geometries that, if you have to think your way through B O sub R, you'll be losing a lot of time, because you're going to see these geometries all the time. And so there are right-hand rules that we can use to get the direction of the field around these three geometries. So let's imagine that we have a wire, a current-carrying wire, like so. And if we look at it, and we imagine we have the current coming out at us, so let that be the dot. The current is coming out at us. What I'd like to do is to think about what is the direction of the magnetic field. So, outside of the wire. So if we now look at a point P here, then that is given relative to the wire by some vector r, like so. And the current is coming out at you. So by the right-hand rule, it's IDL cross R. So DL is going to be coming out at you, or DI is coming out at you. And so it's IDL cross R. So if DI is coming out at you, and you cross it into R, you're going to have the field going up. And you'll be tempted to do this, but that's not where you're calculating the field, right? By Bo sub R, what you're doing is you're calculating the field at point P, and it is up. Okay? And if we look at a point over here, we now have R like this. I is coming out. Cross it into R. It's going that direction. If we put P over here, here's R, do the cross product, you'll find it's going like this. If you put P down here, I bet you can figure out what direction it's going to go. It's like that. Okay? So what you get by symmetry is for an infinite line current, you'll get the magnetic field. Ooh, supposed to look like a circle. Let me make it look like a circle. And it will circulate around the wire like this. And it will drop in strength as 1 over R squared as you go away from the wire. Okay? But what I wanted to do with this right now is to basically give you a rule of thumb, if you want. What you see is we can use Bo sub R, and we can figure out the direction of the B field everywhere. But here is a right-hand rule that will let you do this. If you grasp the wire with your hand, with your thumb pointing in the direction of the current, okay, your fingers will be rotating around the wire in the direction of the magnetic field. Okay? Again, right hand, because if you do it with your left hand, you're going to have the field going the wrong way. Okay, so that's one right hand rule. So imagine you put your thumb like so, and then your fingers do that. All right, so that's sort of the... There's a reason that I'm not an artist. Okay, so there are other geometries that you'll see that are useful. One in particular is a current loop. So if we imagine that we have a wire that's set up in a current loop form. Yikes, what did I do there? Okay. So let's say that we have a current loop, and in this case we're going to say that the current is going around clockwise. Then if we want to ask what is the direction of the magnetic field in the center of this loop due to the current that is going around in this wire. So if we put point P here in the center, then we consider a little DI here. R is going this way. Now, I cross R is going to be into the board. You okay with that? And if I put little DI over here, DI is going this way. So if I put my fingers along DI, cross into R, again, it's into the board. So what you find is that B is into your paper. So you're welcome to use BS of R. Think your way through it every time you see a current loop. Here's the rule of thumb that I use. If you here's your loop, you look at the direction of the current, you act as if this loop is sort of a pipe, and you're grabbing the pipe, this time with your fingers going in the direction of the current flow. Okay, so it's like you grab onto the loop like this with your fingers going in the direction of the current flow. Now your thumb will point in the direction of the magnetic field on the inside of this loop.
Why don't you just use the same right here loop that you used before?
You can. Alright, you can grab it current like that, and now you know your fingers are going in the direction of the field. Either way, whatever works for you. I like having lots of different right-hand rules because it's more and more confusing, right? Now, you have to be a little bit cautious here. There is a gotcha, which is if we look at the loop from the side, let's get it right here. If we can imagine that here's your eyeball and we're looking at the loop so that we have the current going into the board and then coming out of the board here, then we ask, what is the direction of the field? We already know that if we ask, what is it at point P, right? I now draw R this way. DI is going into the board, so we have DI cross R. It's going to be down. So B here is down. I can also get that by taking my little rule of grabbing the loop and my thumb points in the direction down. Okay. But now, what is the direction of the field on the outside of the loop? If we have point P over here, and here is R. Now the current is going in, cross it in R, it's up. Okay? And you'll find, so what happens is in a loop geometry, you will have B circulating around like that. And in fact, if we draw it a little bit more carefully, we have I like this, what you'll have is you have this kind of geometry where you'll have the magnetic field flux going in through the loop and then coming the other direction outside the loop. Okay? You can do yoga with it if you want or whatever. All right. This stuff's easy. You're almost guaranteed I will give you a handful of little right-hand rule problems, making up a page or two of your next test. They'll be there. You know they're coming. These are easy. Don't miss any of them. Don't use your left hand. Right? My intent is to give you those points, giving you very simple problems because it is important that you actually get all the directions right. But if you're using your left hand and you lose 20 points just because of that, you know, what can I do? So we'll do right hand practice right before the test or something. And, all right. So it is coming and you know it's coming. So it may seem sort of silly, but you got to get these directions right in all of these problems. It becomes hard to do the problems without it. Okay, so let's do an example problem. Let's say that we have an axis, which in this case I'm going to call the x axis, this direction. And the z is here. And the y is going up. Let us imagine that you have a current loop. Oh boy, so this is going to be hard to draw. So what I want to imagine is having a current loop, which is in the yz plane. It's going to take me half the class to draw it. Helps to do this, actually. Well, I shouldn't promise that, should I? It might not help. All right, well, you sort of get the idea, I hope. And we're going to say that this has a current, and the current is going around like this. And let's find B at the origin in this case. So we're going to put point P right here. Right. So in this problem, we know that we have DI, a little differential current, or a little DL of the current, I should say, would look like this. And R going to point P is going to be the radius of this circle, or vector going from DL into point P. And we're going to say that this circle has a radius of big R, which I'm not going to show because it would make it too crowded. All right. So if we look at this if we say that our eyeball is right here, and we look at it with the x-axis coming into our eyeball, then it'll look something like this. So the y is that way, the z is that way. And now we have our little dl, and we have our vector r. And just for reference, this distance is a big R. Okay? So in order to think your way through this problem, you want to think about the differential form of B O sub R initially, and then integrate over the current distribution, which in this case is just that entire loop. So dB goes as mu 0 over 4 pi times I dl cross R hat over R squared. And so you get tempted to put a little dr or something like that, but you've got the dl here, so you've got differentials, and I'm running out of batteries here. So, first of all, let's think about the direction. What is the direction of idl cross r? It's going to be into the board, right? Because the current is going clockwise. So at the point DL I have written up there, you do the right-hand rule of IDL cross R, you're going to be into the board. Or you can do the right-hand rule of grasping the loop with your fingers going around and the field going inside. So we know that this tells us that the magnetic field is going into the board. which is going to be in the minus x direction. And in this particular problem, you want to look at the symmetry, because once you have the direction, right, the cross product is basically evaluated, but you have to worry about the sine theta. Remember, the cross product would go as dl times r hat times sine of the angle between them. But that angle in this particular problem, because dl is always around the circle, I don't think I brought my backup today. Sorry about that. Because dl is always going clockwise, and it's always going to be at right angles to r, then idl cross r, the sine theta is always going to be just 1. So this just becomes idl cross r just becomes idl, right? And if we think about dl as a little arc length along the circle, then basically we can convert this into IDS, where this is arc length. You don't necessarily have to do that conversion, but DS is sort of what we always use for arc length. So, so DB now is equal to mu 0 over 4 pi times IDL. It's going to be in the minus x hat direction, and it's going to be over r squared, but the magnitude of r is fixed as you go all the way around the circle because of the symmetry of this problem. So this is over big R squared. And now if you, we look at this, we want to integrate over all the dBs as we go around. I is fixed, dl is the arc length, r squared is fixed, so this integral is going to be pretty easy. B is going to be equal to a bunch of constants, mu 0 over 4 pi r squared pi times, and it'll be in the minus x hat direction, and it's going to be times the integral as we go around the circle of ds going from 0 to 2 pi r all the way around. Okay? So b at the center, at the origin, is going to be mu 0 times I. We pull in the, okay, so I might as well write it out. 4 pi r squared 2 pi r. And so the 2 pi, you get a factor of 2 from the 2 pi over 4 pi, and one of the r's canceled. So, and this is in the x hat direction, minus x hat direction. So we get mu 0 I over 2 r. Okay? Did I drop anything? Hopefully not. You'll run into this all the time because little circular current loops are a pretty common thing, but this is sort of how to go about doing the Biot-Savart problems. And you'll notice a lot of things about it. I could just add a strange bend in this loop and this becomes an impossible problem to do, right? So, again, what you'll find for these types of problems is there'll be symmetry. So you want to look at the symmetry, which will allow you to simplify the thing that I'm pointing to. That you, sorry, this is going to get difficult. I can see. See if there's some batteries I can steal. Sometimes you just wiggle them around. Say the right incantation and the chemical processes listen. No. Okay. So you'll have to look fast because the laser only gives me a short bit of time every time I point. At any rate, you have the cross product, so there's an issue there. You can imagine if you have to worry, you do have to worry about the angle and whether that changes as you integrate over your distribution. In this case, it's simple because DL and R are always at the same thing. It's also simple because that angle is always 90 degrees, so the sine theta and the cross product is always 1. The other thing is it's 1 over R squared, which in principle you have to integrate over, but in this case, the R, which is the distance from point P to the DI that you're integrating around, is always fixed, so it simplifies it. So this problem is a very easy one to evaluate for BS of R, but you can imagine that you'll see other geometries where it's less so, but those are the kinds of things that you want to look at in order to try to simplify the distribution.
Professor?
Yep.
We would always, in most cases of this form, we would have a perfect circular system because like you said, if we put a dent in it, it would make it impossible. But does the P necessarily have to be in the dead center for it to be fairly doable?
If I take the P and put it off center, it becomes way less doable.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what makes it hard. In fact, you don't have to have a perfect circle, right? You could do this problem very nicely with a semicircle. So what you might expect to see circular segments in this problem. And what makes, I mean, I could have circular segments with the kind of problem that you'll see, for example, is you might see something where you have a wire coming in like this, circular segment, and the wire leaves. And you have point P, which is at the radius of the circular segment. You could then even have other wires like this. And now, oops, that one wouldn't work well because you've got the current going both directions. Okay, so we're going to do it like that. Now think of what happens for one of these wires that's along the radius. If it's along the radius, you've got DI. DI is coming this way. R is going out. They're collinear, so the cross product is 0. So for wires that are headed toward the point where you're evaluating the field, the contribution is going to be 0. And then for the semicircular pieces, you have exactly the problem we just did, except for your integral limits may change. And they, you know, you now have to worry about are the magnitudes of the currents the same and stuff like that. Again, you're talking about magnetic fields. It's a vector field. So just like with electric fields, you use vector superposition, which means so long as I stick, or anyone sticks to the rules of giving you lines that are pointed toward your point and circular segments, it's actually pretty easy to calculate and then add them together vectorially. You even can, I mean, the direction is even simple. It's either straight down or straight up from that little piece of circular segment, and you just add them together, right? So you'll see a lot of that kind of problem.
They have to be straight up or straight down? Like, would you do it around a full sphere instead of just a flat plane? Sorry.
We'll see, won't we? Maybe I'll do that on the test. Yeah, I'll have to think about that.
You're welcome.
No, I mean, I could make it. A sphere would be difficult. I mean, that'd be like a sheet current, but I could do a loop like a loop like this,
yes,
and a loop like that,
and it would just go
and ask you to find the superposition field. So yeah, just like with electrostatics, if I'm doing my job, at some point I will throw some weird geometry at you that when you look at it, you go, holy crap, why is he smoking? And then when you look at it, you'll realize that it's really made up of little simple pieces that you can do easily, right? And then you take it apart, do those simple pieces, and then it may be annoying to combine all the vector pieces correctly, but it's quite doable, right? So that's a... Yep?
I was just wondering why conceptually there wouldn't be any impacts on the electric field at the point there's an accessibility where the current is moving radially towards the point.
the field conceptually circulates around a current. And if the current is basically headed straight at you, the field will circulate. So if it's a real wire, for example, and it has a real radius that you can identify, and the current is distributed in the wire, as we'll see soon, yes, there is a field inside that, but it isn't. It's basically circulating around the point at the center. The mathematics is this is one of those examples. Very often I have silly little mental models or pictures that make things make sense to me. This is one where I just go to the math, and if the current is headed toward you, remember the vector r is from a little segment of the current to the point where you're getting the field, and if they're collinear, the cross product will always be zero. So the mathematics, I think, is pretty straightforward that way. So conceptually, that's actually how I think about this one. And then the other picture, I guess, is just the field's always circulating. So if in the limit that you actually have an infinitesimally thin wire and it's going right through that point, it can't produce a field there because it's circulating around it. So it's zero at the center, I suppose. All right. Not all geometries are quite this simple. You're guaranteed to have geometries where the sine theta has to be taken into account, and you'll have to integrate. So things will be a bit more complex. They can, of course, be ridiculously complex, and it can be impossible to calculate the magnetic field. So remember that we ran into the same thing with the electric field, and one of the things that saved us with the electric field was that we had Gauss's law in electrostatics, which allowed us to calculate the electric field in circumstances of particular symmetry. So remember that we could now hypothesize in some charge distribution any closed surface, and if you integrate the flux, E dot dA, over that closed surface, that's equal to the total charge enclosing the surface over epsilon naught. And it is particularly useful for calculating the electric field under circumstances where the symmetry allows you to evaluate these things easily. So, for example, if it's a spherical problem and you're looking at E at annular spheres, then at different radii, E is, by symmetry of the problem, if you don't have angular dependence, if it's only radial dependence in the charge, E is going to be constant at that given radius, and dA is always out or in, depending on the kind of charge you have in here, but it's radial, and E will be radial, so the dot product becomes easy. E is constant on the sphere that you're integrating over, so you can pull it out, so the left-hand side is easy. And similarly, the right-hand side basically is a volume integral over the charge distribution. So in case of certain symmetry, that's pretty easy to calculate. As you've seen with Biot-Savart, things can be potentially quite difficult with calculating magnetic fields, just like with Coulomb. So what we want is something sort of similar to Gauss's law in magnetostatics. And the law that we'll use in magnetostatics, which is useful in the same sort of way as Gauss's law is to electromagnetism, is called Ampere's law. And Ampere's law is the integral of B dot dS around some closed curve is equal to mu zero times I enclosed. All right. So if I have some loop which is closed, and it happens to have a current that penetrates through the loop topologically. Okay, what you mean by I enclosed is if you take that loop, if the current were a solid rope or something, okay, and you take that loop and you tried to yank it, it would get caught by the rope. Yes?
So the current can't be in the same plane as the circle or the path?
Right. Yeah, it has to penetrate through the plane of this loop. All right, what I'm pondering right now is we're going to be looking at this all in two dimensions. I mean, so we're gonna have this loop in a plane, and then what you say is absolutely true. I'm trying to remember whether you can have a loop that's actually, you know, does this kind of business in 3D and comes back, not being a single plane. But I think that would be. I don't remember seeing that right now, and it may be you can decompose that into other problems, but we're going to assume that the loop is in a plane for now, and then I'll have to ponder whether it's even a use. I don't think it's actually a useful thing if your closed loop goes into multiple dimensions. There may be a reason, I mean, into three dimensions, there may be a good reason why that's actually not a way that you would ever do it. At least get it looking. Okay. So, just like with Gauss's law, okay, this is always true in general. It is particularly useful under conditions of certain symmetry. And what symmetry will that be? It will be the symmetry where you can choose. Where in Gauss's law we were choosing Gaussian surfaces that had a symmetry that fit the problem, now you're going to choose Ampurian loops that have a symmetry that fits the problem. So if you choose a loop such that as you integrate around the loop, B is constant, and if B is, for example, always with some orientation with respect to ds as you integrate around the loop, then you're going to find that the dot product can be simple, or that b can be constant, and you can pull it out and the integral becomes easy to do, and then all you have to do is sum up the current that's going through the loop. So I think fairly much like Gauss's law, this is probably best done through some examples. So let's start with one which is just going to be an infinite line current. And in order to do this problem, the symmetry of this problem, we've already seen that if we have this infinite line current, that the magnetic field circulates around it. So you can imagine the magnetic field basically having the same magnitude on every coaxial cylindrical surface that surrounds this pipe, right? And that magnitude is now dropping off as 1 over r squared as you go, well, we're going to figure out how it drops off, actually, because we're going to calculate B. But you can imagine that it's going to have a radial dependence. So what we'd like to do is to determine B around this wire. So we're going to choose an Ampurian loop which has a radius. You can't see it from this this sort of orientation. So we're going to look at it head on. We're going to have the wire coming through our eye again. So let's assume that we have the current going into the board, and I'm going to choose. We know that if the current is going into the board, that the magnetic field is going to circulate around clockwise. So B is going to look something like that, right? And it's going to be the same strength all the way around. So what I'd like to do for this problem is to choose an arbitrary, the problem itself, which I didn't actually specify, is to find B everywhere, okay? And from the symmetry of the problem and the way that we see how B has to go around this infinite wire, we know that B is going to be circulating around the wire, so the direction we sort of already have, and it's going to have some sort of radial dependence, which is what we're basically going to figure out. So to do this problem, just as if it were in electrostatics, we could choose some arbitrary Gaussian surface at a fixed radius. In this case, we're going to choose an arbitrary, not completely arbitrary because it's going to be coaxial, we're going to choose an Amperean loop of radius r. Okay? And I'm going to integrate around this loop clockwise in the same direction as the field. And now, because Ampere's law is always true, even for this fictitious loop that we just invented, we're going to say that Ampere holds true, so that means that B dot ds around this loop is equal to mu 0 times I enclosed. Well, B and ds are in the same direction, so the dot product is just B times ds, which is a scalar. The magnitude of B is fixed at a given radius, r, so that now can pull out of the integral, and I'm left with B, the magnitude of B, times the integral of ds around the circle. From 0 to 2 pi little r, because I am integrating around the little loop that I invented, okay? So the magnitude of B at little r is equal to mu 0 times I, because in this case you know what the total current is, it's going through the loop, over 2 pi r. Okay? And this is a lot easier than taking little differential I's and doing B of sub r, integrating from minus infinity to infinity, with the angle, with r changing and the angle changing throughout the problem. Right? You have any questions on this? Yes?
How would you like to find a direction?
You can just use your right hand rule or think your way through B O sub r. Right, so if I think my way through B O sub r, I have a little di which is headed into the board, and I have r coming out to that radius, and so di cross r is going to be down if I'm over to the right-hand side of the Amperean loop. It'll be up if I'm over to the left-hand side. So use B O sub r, the little differential form of B O sub r, to think your way through directions, or you can use the right-hand rules that we just came up with, which is I can grab the wire with my thumb headed in the wire and the field will circulate like this around it. Oh, how would I write it? In this problem, I would say, I mean, you have to specify which view you're looking at, and then in this, I would say clockwise. Circulates clockwise, and you have only as a function of R. But you'll have to, I mean, that is problem dependent and on how you draw it and things like that. So all you want to do is somehow specify it carefully. For example, if when you were doing this problem on some exam and you decided to look at it such that the current was coming into your eye instead of out of your eye, you'd have the circulation going the other way. So you just have to specify. Okay, so I have a Java applet to help you visualize some of these things. What we have is a current-carrying wire with the current coming out at you, and you can vary the current magnitude. And you've got the little black vectors show the magnetic field surrounding that wire, and note that it falls off in strength. And it should fall off linearly in strength, as we just discovered, that the field around an infinite wire drops off as 1 over R. Now, I could give you an arbitrary number of wires. And then the field at every point is the vector superposition of those two. So, right, so there's the blue field, there's the orange field, and then that's the superposition. You can take the orange and make the field go backwards. So now it circulates the other way, and you've got the cross instead of the current coming out of you, the current's going in. Blue that way, superposition. And then I think the people I asked to program this were bored, so they... they added the 3D effect, okay? So, and now you can move these things around. Ooh. You can see the vector superposition, though. If I put one on top of the other, you basically make the field go away. See, it's cool. All right. Okay, so you can impress your friends at parties with this. Again, that link should... The Java applet is on the website. I don't remember if I actually have the links already up. I think I do. So you can play with that to your heart's desire. Okay. There is sort of a long and drawn-out example that I'm going to do, which I'll have to do. Well, I'll get it started this class, so never mind. I'll come back to that. There is a geometry that's very useful to look at, which is sort of like the magnetic analog to the parallel plate system that we had in electrostatics. And in this, in magnetostatics, it's the solenoid that we want to study. So a solenoid basically is, you visualize a slinky. You know what I mean when I say slinky? You all have slinkies? Good. So it's basically a geometry like this. So you have a current coming in here, it circulates around, and comes out here. And really, we'll actually imagine having an infinite one. So what I'd like to do is to look at the field of an infinite solenoid. So what I mean when I say infinite solenoid is that it is infinitely long, not infinite in radius. So it has some fixed radius. And there is one quantity that you have to specify usually with a solenoid, which is how many loops per unit length you have. So we're going to say that it has n loops per unit length. The loop density. Okay? Now, what I'd like to do is to take this solenoid and just slice it right down the middle so that you can see it. We're going to pretend that we're able to slice it and the current still runs. But if I were to do that, if you take the geometry that we see now, see the current is coming in from behind, it's circulating out toward you, it's coming back around, so at the bottom it's always going in, and at the top it's always coming out. So if I were to slice this thing and we were to look at it, you would have the current coming out at you like so, and then down at the bottom you would have it going in like so. And that's an infinite geometry. You okay with that? All right. So now I want to consider what we will... Let's think about the field. It's usually good in all of these types of problems to spend a minute just sort of thinking about the symmetry of the problem and what could be happening. In this particular problem, all of the wires coming out at you are carrying the same current because it just goes around in a loop. It's the same thing. And going in, it's the same magnitude of the current. For wires coming out, the field that's coming from each of the top of each of these loops in the plane that we've cut it in the middle of this solenoid circulates like this. Okay? So you can imagine if you go close enough to that wire, it's going to look like a long wire, and the field you have a feeling for. So if the thing is coming out at you, we're going to have the field looking something like this. Right? But that's going to be true for all of them. If I could draw perfectly, these would all look the same. Okay? Now, what do you notice? In between each of those black dots, right in the middle between two of them, what you'll see is that the one to the right is giving you a field that's going up in the middle. The one to the left is giving you a field that's going down in the middle. You see that? If you go right in the middle, by symmetry, they're going to have the same strength and it's going to totally cancel out. All right? Because it's an infinite solenoid, you basically can be anywhere along here. You pick any position and by symmetry you will have one wire over here that's giving you a field down, and one wire over here, same distance away, that's giving you a field up, and those two will cancel. So by symmetry, the contribution of all of those wires, the up and down component of the magnetic field will cancel. If you look at the top, above those black wires, they all have the back magnetic field going from your right to left. Okay? And on the bottom, it's all coming from left to right. And there's no up or down component because that piece cancels out. For every wire over here, I have a wire over here. But the wire over here and the wire over here is giving me a component of field that is going this way up above them and this way down below. So by symmetry, from this particular piece, I have B looking like this, and, oh, I did that backwards, sorry. You okay with that? Similarly, if we go down below, the current is going in, which means the circulation is like this. So now I'll have a circulation like so. All the arguments we used just a moment ago hold true, but in this case, if we just consider the wires on the bottom of the solenoid in the plane where we're thinking about it, we're going to have the contribution to the magnetic field up above them go this way, and the contribution of the magnetic field down below them go that way. You okay? All right. So let us consider now, for the moment, just the contribution from up above, and I'd like to draw an Amperian loop now that we sort of see what the symmetry is. And the Amperian loop I want to draw is going to look like a rectangle, like so. And I choose this Amperian loop because the left and right sides, as I integrate ds, the B field is always going to be at right angles, so there will be no contribution to B dot ds from the left side or the right side of this. At the top and the bottom, as I integrate around, there will be a contribution. So, up at the top, ds is going this way. At the bottom, ds is going that way. Probably a poor choice because they're going in the wrong directions. Let me integrate around the other way just so I have them all. Doesn't matter what direction you integrate around. So let's say that I have, as I integrate around the loop, I do it this way. All right? And we're going to say that this length is length L. So if I just worry about the top part of amperes of this solenoid, and I ask, what does ampere tell me for the contribution to the field in the loop? Or what does the field look like from that? If I have symmetry, so if I have the distance down below being the same as the distance up above, by symmetry on this Amperian loop, the field on the bottom piece and the field on the top piece will have the same magnitude. As I integrate around the loop, ds and b is in the same direction. So b dot ds is just b times ds, and that's just going to be b times L on the top and B times L on the bottom. So if we look at the integral, the integral of B dot ds for this top part is going to be 2 times B times dl, I'm sorry, times L. And that's going to be equal to mu 0 times the number of loops per unit length times the length, which gives me the number of times the wire penetrates through this loop. You with me? So the magnitude of B is equal to mu 0 over n over 2. So if we imagine this sheet of wires, current-carrying wires coming out at you, what we have just evaluated is that the magnetic field is constant up above the sheet going in this direction. Doesn't matter how far you get away from it, because it's an infinite solenoid. It's an infinite sheet of current, if you want to think of it that way, coming out at you. It doesn't matter how far up above you go. If it were, in the case where we had an infinite current sheet coming out at you, then the field will always be infinite always be constant. It'll be this mu zero n over 2, where n is the number of wire, the current density coming out at you. And it's always going to be to one side. And the field down below is always going to be the other way. Okay? And again, it doesn't change as you go out. So this is exactly the same as what you saw when we had the infinite charge sheet, where we had the field all uniform going infinitely out that way and that way. Okay? In this case, we have this weird geometry because we have the solenoid. So down below, we have exactly the same solution, but the fields are going the opposite way. Okay? But note, because it doesn't matter how far away from these wires I am, the field from the top wires down below the bottom wires will cancel the field from the bottom wires. Does that make sense? If you look at what happens if I'm down here outside of the solenoid, look at the field from the top wires. It's going to be this way, and the field from the bottom wires will be that way. The number of wires per unit length is the same, and the fields have the same magnitude, so they just cancel out. Up above, if you go up above the dots, the field from the dots up above goes this way, and the field from the X's down below goes the other way, and they cancel. So outside of the solenoid, the field cancels. Inside the solenoid, they're both going the same direction. Yes?
Can you repeat why it cancels on the outside again?
Wish I had this. Let's look at the field right here, which is outside the solenoid, okay? Let's first ask, what is the direction of the field here due to the top part of the solenoid? There, we have the field going from your left to your right by symmetry, and it's going to be mu zero n over 2 in magnitude, and it doesn't matter that we're far away, okay? So you have the field doing this. If we now ask what is the contribution from the bottom part of the solenoid, it's exactly the same answer, but it's going to be this direction because the current's going the other way. So they'll cancel out exactly. There was nothing special about this point. I could choose any point outside the solenoid and the symmetry argument will still hold. Okay? Inside the solenoid, they add together and you just get the factor of 2. So we have a situation where we have a geometry with the infinite solenoid where the magnetic field is mu zero times n, where n is the number of loops per unit length, and it is uniform throughout the inside of that solenoid and infinite, I mean, along the solenoid. So we have constructed a situation where, just like we had if the electric fields in the parallel plate system, we have a very simple uniform field that we can understand entirely through the geometry of the problem and the specification of what is the current density. I must have dropped an I somewhere. No, that's in. Current is going to be the current for a single wire times the total number of them, which is going to be n times l. So I dropped an I right up here. Okay? Yeah.
Okay, so wait, why does it cancel outside the solenoid? Because the arrows are going in the same direction.
If you look at the bottom arrow for the pink ones and the bottom arrow for the blue ones, those are the ones that are relevant if you're down below outside, and they cancel. If you look at the top arrow for the pink ones and the top arrow for the blue ones, when you're outside up above, they'll cancel. When you're inside, both arrows are going the same direction. So it's actually pretty similar to what we did with the electric sheets as well. Yes?
When you say a number of loops, are you defining a loop as like if this is the z direction and it goes from the same y coordinate, like so it loops in the z direction, so like it's never a like loop. So
right. Yeah. So I mean, you take your slinky and you imagine it's pretty packed tight, and the wire goes around and around and around, and it's true because it's a helical form that it doesn't exactly close in a loop, but that we don't worry about that. So you picture this in your mind as in single current carrying loops packed together, just going around in a circle. With the same current, yeah. If you took the slinky and you stretched it way out so that it looked like this or something, right, then this would be sort of funky, right? And that wouldn't work too well. All right. Okay, so the next thing I want to do is actually a conventional and fairly long Ampere's law problem, so I'm just not going to bother starting it right now. Any questions? Okay, so you owe me presentation preference sheets, which is put right up here, and homeworks. Have a good weekend.